Hi, and welcome to Kaleido Science. You are listening to our winter special, where we are taking a look at science communication. During December, we'll have special episodes on Sundays, where we talk to fellow science communicators about their medium and experience. In January, we'll go back to our schedule and we will take a look at the research behind science communication. This episode is hosted by Elisa Palme and Sophie Kühne. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Winter Special. Today we are talking to Evelyn Fratz, who is a doctoral student at the Moral and Social Brain Lab at the University of Ghent in Belgium. And additionally, she's an avid science communicator working for the InMind blog, doing science communication with children and showing the good and the bad sides of being a researcher on LinkedIn. Welcome.
Hello, welcome. Thank you.
And as always, at the beginning of our episodes, we play our get-to-know game, where we will give you three sentences and we'll ask you to finish them as spontaneously as you can.
Okay.
The first sentence is, as a kid, I always wanted to be...
A professional musician.
For something specific or just in general position?
The flute. I loved playing the flute and I always did it. My whole weeks and weekdays, weekends were always about making music. And I also did 1 year at the conservatory, but then I chose to study biology instead.
Nice. Our second sentence. Currently, I'm most fascinated by...
At this moment with Christmas decorations.
Relatable. <Nice. laughs>
And our last sentence. If I was an emoji, I would be...
I think the one with like the tongue out and then with the wink.
The one with the straight head or with the turned head?
Straight head.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Don't think Why? We've had that one.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it fun?
Yeah.
Or a cat. I would also choose a cat.
Nice. Why do you think is it relevant that scientists themselves also communicate their science? So why shouldn't scientists just do their science, keep it separated from everyone else who isn't into science? So why should we talk about it?
I personally feel that science communication is part of our job. It's like part of our responsibility as a researcher, because we are paid. We are paid by the government. We are paid by taxes. So we are paid by society. And society, the world, everything is built on science. I hope so. But a lot of things are built on science. So I think it's only normal that researchers talk about what they're doing, and not only in their ivory tower, in their fancy journals, but also in ways that people can understand. And I know sometimes it can be a bit more difficult when you have a very abstract topic, for example. Like my topic, I work with moral decision making, with people, with like doing the good, doing the bad. So for me, it's very easy because everyone can relate to that. Everyone knows situations about morality or making decisions or like authority. But still, I think it's your job to communicate science because society has to know what we're doing to also have the trust in us. There are a lot of mediums that spread things that are maybe not so scientific. And even though as a scientist, I also don't know everything. And I also make mistakes. And when I talk about a topic that's maybe not fully my expertise, most of the time I will make a mistake. But still, I know more than just a random person talking about it on another platform, maybe. So I also think it's our responsibility to what we know to communicate it. That people have good knowledge and that they can, that they know the right things. Or also that they sometimes know that we also don't know. Like I recently had to go to a doctor, and I asked something and he said, yeah, I actually don't know. I'm gonna check in my book. And I was like, wow, that's actually so nice. I didn't feel like, oh my God, that's a bad doctor. But I was just like, yeah, that's just how it is. And I think it's also important to spread that.
Very good. I already introduced that you work for the InMind blog and that you do some science communication with children. Could you tell us a little bit more about both projects?
So with InMind, I'm the blog coordinator. InMind is a platform for psychology. It's written in Dutch. It's for the Netherlands and Belgium. And what we do is we have a monthly blog about a science, psychology, sociology related theme. And as a blog coordinator, I receive all the blogs. I give them the first feedback. I edit them. And then whenever they have processed the article again, I will put it online. And I will also make sure that everything goes smoothly and that it's not twice the same topic. Things like that. And with the festival for children, that's called the Brain Bee or the Hersenolympiade in the Netherlands. It's an international event, actually. We are connected to the whole international Brain Bee. And what we kind of do is organize Olympiad for high school students. And then the winner of the Olympiad goes to the international version of the Brain Bee. And we give them all types of neuroscience-related questions, like anatomy, but also patient diagnosis and random facts. And then besides the quiz itself, we also organize a whole day around it with a lot of researchers coming and talking about their work. We have a kind of market where we show a lot of work and a lot of, yeah, for example, VR glasses or like models. They normally have a brain dissection that they can attend. Normally someone from the psychobiology bachelor in Amsterdam gives an EEG session. So that's what that day looks like.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, I would have loved that as a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree.
And all of the things you do, like being a blog coordinator, is obviously very different from doing like a practical event with children. What do you think kind of brought you to do these different kinds of science communication? Like, why did you decide to work on a blog and on like event planning compared to, I don't know, a podcast, for example?
I have to admit that I know I never would make a podcast myself. So most of my mediums are always written, like my small post on LinkedIn, or the blogs I write for InMind. But actually a podcast, I would never do that myself. I still love to be here with you, but for example, I would never initiate it myself. So InMind and the Science Festival for Children are very different, but they're both two ways that I can get that I can talk at the general audience, because a high school student will maybe not listen to a podcast or read a very long blog, but if you have a day full of events, that's maybe more encouraging for them. And I also really like to do more different things. Yeah, I also really like that, just to do different things.
I think that's really cool. And what do you enjoy about being like the blog coordinator of InMind?
What I like about being the coordinator is that I am the first person to read all the blogs. And because people, it sounds very obvious, I know, but most of them have a lot of experience with like writing blogs. And then still, sometimes they write such a good blog and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. This is so cool. And sometimes I'm like, okay, we can do this and we can do that. But the topic is really great. And that they take the time voluntarily to write it and to think about, oh, how can I make my message for the real public? I just think it's really fascinating. And I also love psychology research myself. And I haven't had the time to always read papers and always, because PhD life is already pretty chaotic. So I also love it to read it myself.
And the people who write for the InMind blog, these blog posts, are those usually like researchers or like people who generally just inform themselves well on the topic? Or
I think everyone we have now on the team, which is around 11 persons, are all researchers. Most of them are PhD students. We have a few postdocs, and I think even one assistant professor. So they're more specialists in their own fields, and most of them write in their own field and their own expertise. Sometimes I try to challenge them that they write a bit outside just science in general. But most of them are really researchers themselves, yes.
That's very cool. And what do you enjoy the most about doing science communication with children and organizing these like events?
Children are just so fun. They are horrible to communicate with. Like, don't ever do an event for people 16, 17, 18, because it's very hard to target them. But the people that attend the festival, they are so motivated and they are so clever. Like, we give them like a little bit of homework, like, okay, this is the material for the quiz. And sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I knew this question, I knew the answer somewhere, but then these children are so amazing and they're so intrigued by the brain already that I'm like, wow, that's so cool. That's yeah. I just find it super inspiring that they are already so motivated, that they like it so much. And sometimes people really come to me afterwards and like, yeah, I really know what I'm going to study now. Or I really like this bachelor, because we also have a bachelor promotion of the 3 neuroscience bachelors in the Netherlands. And I just, I'm so happy that platform is there, because I never had it. For me, brain science was really, yeah, I think there was one chapter about it in my biology books, but that was it. And then when I went to my first bachelor open day, I was like, wow, this is amazing. But I also grew up in the south of the Netherlands, so then I wouldn't say opportunities were less, but it is Breslau connected than, for example, Amsterdam or Utrecht. So I never knew about initiatives like this or something like this. So I'm really happy that it's there and that I also always actively promote in my area, in the south of the Netherlands. And yeah, I'm just really happy it exists, because I wish it was there for me.
I think this just brought back a memory that one of the reasons I actually went into science was a guy who gave a presentation about his research on Parkinson's, I think at that point at school. And I remember like being so amazed by this, because it was this, so I was about 15 at the time, so I obviously also could only know from like stereotypes, but it was this like heavily tattooed guy with long black hair. And he then held such an interesting talk about how he was researching Parkinson's on flies. And well, this sounds very like random, this actually was part of the inspiration that kind of drew me into neuroscience and drew me into starting to like look into that topic. So I think these events for children and giving them opportunities to learn and opening their eyes to parts of the world they might not see otherwise are actually very helpful.
I completely agree. And neuroscience is not such an old discipline yet. So, for example, the Brain Olympiad is already much older in the Netherlands. And there are so many children that are already attending in whole schools. But like neuroscience, that's very, very new actually. So yeah, I really like that. And I really hope that we can continue with having more participants and more popularity.
And what would you say is like the most challenging part about organizing these events? You already touched that the communication with the children is kind of difficult, but is that the only thing, or are there other things where you like?
It's not that. It's just a difficult group to target because they're like young adolescents, and you communicate formally via email, and sometimes they're already also quite busy, because they're choosing their career, their technical bachelor day. Sometimes they have to do a lot of admin tests, admission tests, I'm sorry. So it's also normal that they're a bit difficult to target. But I do know that people who come, they are really motivated. So that's really nice for me. Well, events like this, they are built on connections. They are built on people knowing each other. And we have a professor from Nijmegen who is of the Donders Institute, who is working with us. We have someone from Tilburg. We have someone from Amsterdam. And I think through the years, I really noticed, like, we need them. We need all those connections, because you can formally write an email to the head of department X asking like, hey, can I use this room? Can we book this equipment? Blah, blah, blah. But just having those connections, it's so much easier. It's also essential. And I moved almost 2 years ago to Belgium, from the Netherlands to Belgium. And then I also noticed it's sometimes more difficult for me to organize the event, because I can do things online, but it's much harder for me to just go by or to know what's really going on. So I say it's just communication with all the different people involved, from the sponsors towards the people from the room to the emergency people to like everyone. That's sometimes quite challenging, and it's really built on connections.
And is there anything you find challenging about coordinating the blog?
It's just very different than, for example, the event for children that I organize, because it's more something, it's completely remote, so it's completely online. And I can kind of make my own schedule. Like, for example, someone just hand in a blog, and I have to read it somewhere this week and then send them the feedback. But it's completely up to me when I will read it. So actually, time management and communication wise, I am a bit like the leader. Yeah, not sounding like dominant, but just the way it's structurized. Sometimes I find it hard to, because I'm not really used to be a leader. So I can give people feedback, and sometimes they don't agree with me, or they still, you ask, hey, you give me a blog of 800 words and they come with 1600 words. And then my first reaction is always, I really want this to be a cool blog, and then I want to invest a lot of time in it. But then I have to remind myself, okay, I'm the coordinator. I just have to give them the feedback like, okay, no, the blog has to be around 800 words. These are the suggestions. Can you do this, 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 and this? So, and that's new for me, just handling people in that way and still being respectful. And also, I have my own way of writing blogs. I've written already 2 blogs for InMinds, and I'm now working on my 3rd one for another platform. I have my own way of writing, and I like it, but of course other people have other ways, and that sometimes it's just very new still for me. So I have to sometimes find a way to like, okay, I like it, I don't like this, how can we find a balance? And that's a bit new for me, but I think I'm adjusting quite well. But yeah, that will be my challenging point if I have to say something.
Yeah, I can imagine to have, like, it's difficult to still be like, it's really cool that you're doing this, but also we need you to do this a little bit different than you're currently doing this. Like, have clear boundaries while still emphasizing that you're obviously happy that people write about their research. So you also use LinkedIn for your science communication, where you kind of show, like, you call it the good and the bads of research, if I remember correctly. where you show a little bit like all the parts, because usually LinkedIn is more like a CV or like a highlight of most people. At least that's what I assume. Otherwise, everybody's doing very well. And you also show the little hiccups during experiments or like, yeah, the more normal parts of research. Could you tell us a little bit more about how you do that and why you do that?
So indeed, on LinkedIn, I try to share my authentic research journey. So from looking for a PhD as a master's student to now being a second chair PhD student. And my motto is really to show the good and the bad, which comes from the soundtrack, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, because I really like that music, coming back to the introduction sentence. And I do that in two ways. In one way, I do it for the researchers, because I sometimes think LinkedIn is full of bullshit and a lot of very high pressure things. So I try to just show my story in a really vulnerable, open way, but also with a bit of humor. Because indeed, what you say, LinkedIn can be, or not can be, for me it is very high pressure, and people only share their achievements and their new papers, and they only criticize other people. And on the other side, I do science communication for the general public. So people that are not scientists, mainly to talk about what I'm doing as a PhD student, because people still think I'm in a lab with a white coat and doing experiments. So tell them what's really like to do science, and also to talk about science in a way that they can understand. And it also touches on the first point, because they all think scientists are like Einsteins and perfect. So also to spread some we are humans in the message. I remembered when I was a master's student, I hated LinkedIn. Everyone says, yeah, you have to use LinkedIn because it's good for your connections and things like that. But it really made me sad and frustrated and very insecure just looking at all these stories. And then one day, I decided to write a very, very unstructured post about my what I would do after my master. Because people would always ask me, yeah, you're almost done with your master's. What are you going to do afterwards? And I hated that question, because it just seems that you have to figure it all out. And I was just trying to, I would not say survive, but writing my literature review, doing my internship, moving everything, and then people always would say it, so I made a post about that, just saying like, hey, it's actually very frustrating when people do that, because it made me feel very insecure and that I haven't figured it out, so maybe don't do that. And I got so many reactions on that, and I was like, whoa, this is actually pretty cool. And then I actually kept doing that more and more, and eventually it really became my thing on LinkedIn to share those short blogs or short posts. I wouldn't even call them blogs, just about doing research, what I'm doing in my day, what went well, what didn't go well. Just the real life stories.
I think that's really nice. And it's also ironic. I mean, having looked at your LinkedIn profile recently, also in preparation for this episode, you do so many things. So I think it's always, in comparison to everybody else, it always feels like we're lacking. So I think it's really good what you're doing on LinkedIn, showing that it's not all glamorous publications.
Yeah.
Since you are doing science communication in so many different ways or media, is there anything where you would say that's the most interesting part or the most interesting thing I've learned the whole time doing that?
So over the years that I do a lot of science communication, I learned really to frame my research. That sounds very obvious, of course, but it's really true. And it's actually very hard. It's very hard to, for example, explain your research in one sentence because you're working on it full time and for multiple years. So to say it in one sentence, that's very hard. And to also make that sentence understandable to other people, if you can do that, you have understand your topic. But that's actually very, very hard. And until today, I still struggle with it sometimes, how to communicate what I do effectively. And that also goes in LinkedIn because, for example, not everyone is a psychology researcher. So if I say something like, yeah, I studied the neural cognitive mechanisms of prosocial disobedience using non-invasive neurostimulation, then people are like, yeah, that's fun.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah, but if I say I study which brain processes are important for moral decision making by stimulating the brain, people are like, oh yeah, that's cool. And how do you do that? Or they always have a next question. They can think about it, and that's what matters for me. So I really learned to how to frame my research in what I say Jibbe Janneke language. I also met a lot of people, science connections, just people doing kind of the same what I do or that are really interested in what I do. But also since I sometimes share the things that I like or don't like about a PhD, then people sometimes really relate to me. And sometimes they really send me messages like, wow, I felt so understood by your post, or this really helped me. And I also like that. It also sometimes made me feel a bit less insecure and less alone. And yeah, just knowing that people like what I do, even though I'm really vulnerable, and sometimes when I post something, I'm like, oh my God, why did I say that? But if then people accept it and see it the way I see it, then I'm happy with that. It also made me a bit stronger in a way, because LinkedIn is full of a lot of people. And there have been times when I get negative comments on my post or feedback, or recently I posted something about the pressure as a PhD student, and that I think, oh my God, you have to do this and you have to do that and you have to do this. And then I saw something on LinkedIn that says, yeah, you have to write 500 words each day, do 3 hours of deep work. I don't know. It continues.
I think I know which post you commented. I think you commented on it. I also saw it, and it was like, yeah, if you do these 15 things a day and you walk at least 10,000 steps and read at least one paper a day, You're ahead of all the other PhD students. And I was like, yeah, because then I don't need to do anything else anymore.
And I don't want to criticize him, because of course on itself it are good points. Because if you don't do anything, or if you only sit on your phone, don't do deep work, if you don't write, research is not going very well. But just this list, and I was already in a stress state, and then seeing this list, I don't know, it made me so frustrated and insecure. And I reposted it, and then there was a whole discussion, and then in the end someone said, yeah, I'm just thinking, if you can't handle the pressure, maybe your PhD isn't for you. And I don't know. Then comments like that, then I'm like, okay, this is my boundary. I don't accept this at that moment, I don't know. I really deleted LinkedIn for a few days out of protest. And that's hard. I sometimes really don't like that there are so many comments, and I try to be really vulnerable. But in the end, I deleted that post. And on the one hand, I do regret that, because as you said, you can relate to it. And I know other people who have said that. But then that one comment, that's hit me.
Yeah. I can imagine. And again, as you said, all of the points that were named in this post are really important points, but simultaneously, you never know the full scope of a person's situation. So I always feel like if you generalize like that, I don't think that's an appropriate comment to recommend somebody to not do a PhD based on a few LinkedIn interactions.
And also, why do you have to be the best PhD student? Or no. Why do you have to be top 1% PhD students? Like, if you look at a PhD is already quite a high standard something in research. And it's a very harsh world. If you love it, that's amazing. But you cannot deny that it's, I wouldn't say more stressful, but it's just a highly competitive environment. So why then even be the one top percent? Like then you kind of encourage that already.
It's difficult.
Yeah, and that's what I try to just make people aware of. That, okay, this is going on, and it's not that it's always going well. There are also a lot of researchers who struggle. There are also researchers who are very successful but still struggle. There are also researchers who are not successful but still struggle. It's not always grant this, paper that, publication this. I really want to just say, like, this is it. And I don't know, well, I hope that I can have a very good academic career, but this is what it is now. And sometimes I am afraid that with being so open, I kind of break down my own career. Or that people say, oh my God, you're too vulnerable, or you're too this, or you're too that. But I also know that I want to break the cycle of that a PhD student has to be perfect, because I know that that's not possible. And that if we keep pushing that, I don't know, that's not how an academic career, how an academic world should be for me. So I try to change that a little bit.
Okay. So do you yourself consume other science com media? Or is there like a science com medium which you personally like look at that you really enjoy?
Well, there are multiple. I do love, I'm more about the local things, or like not like the worldwide things. Like I, for example, love EOS in Belgium. That's like a science platform. I do follow a lot of science festivals myself. Like last week, it was like Science Day. I now helped, I volunteered, but otherwise I would have go myself. There are also some events for example, Women in Science, which I also really love. Mm. I don't know. I don't know exactly. There are a lot of just random things, but I don't have one favorite things, actually. I'm currently reading the book of my promoter, which I also really love, even though I already know a lot about the topic, but I admire her very much, and it's very nice to read about it in this way. And so I just have a lot of random things. I'm also reading a book, or my sister gave me a book about why people, for example, do bad things. Lucifer, the Lucifer effect. So I just have a lot of random things and I switch a lot.
But I think that's really cool, because science festivals are, for example, something I have never attended in my life. I wasn't even fully aware that this existed. So I think that's really cool. If you tell us what they're called exactly, we can also put the ones you think are the most interesting in the show notes.
I will send you some.
Thank you. Perfect. So thank you so much for being in our podcast and taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And just at the end, could you just real quickly tell our listeners where people can find you?
So you can find me on LinkedIn and Blue Sky. And that's actually both just my name. Evelyn Fraats, or Evelien Fraats in Dutch.
And we will link also the blog and both accounts in the show notes. But thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you for organizing.
This was Kaleido Science. We hope that you enjoyed this episode and we would love to have your feedback. You can rate our podcast and give us feedback on our Instagram account. Have a great week and you'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. This episode was hosted by Sophie Kühne and Elisa Palme. Produced by Imogen Hüsing, Clara Kühne, Sophie Kühne, Sönke Lühl and Elisa Palme. The music is from Jan-Luca Schröder and the logo is from Annika Richter.